After a long absence, the Twilight Zone returns with one of the most ambitious, expensive, and controversial productions in broadcast history. This description of a then still upcoming television program was published in a Scottish newspaper last week. The author continues, "Sci-fi writers have dabbled often with alternative history stories. Among the most common is the What if the Nazis had won the Second World War setting. But this huge interactive virtual reality project, which will unfold on TV, in the press, and on Twitter over the next 4 years, sets on to build an ongoing alternative present. The story begins in a nightmarish version of 2017, in which huge sections of the US electorate have somehow been duped into voting to make Donald Trump president. It sounds far-fetched, and it is, but as it goes on, it becomes more and more chillingly possible. Today's feature-length opener concentrates on the gaudy inauguration of President Trump and the stirrings of protest and despair surrounding the ceremony, while pundits speculate gravely on what lies ahead. It's a flawed piece, but it's a disturbing glimpse of the horrors we could stumble into if we're not careful." I checked it out. That was actually published in Scotland's Sunday Herald as its description of Friday's coverage of the inauguration. The story begins in a nightmarish version of 2017. It was quite a weekend, wasn't it? About 250,000 people gathered on the Washington Mall on Friday to see Donald J. Trump sworn in as the nation's 45th president. On Saturday, an estimated 500,000 women, children, and men, but mostly women, descended on D.C. to make their presence and their voices seen, heard, and felt. Throughout the country, it's been estimated that roughly 3 to 4 million people gathered in solidarity with what was once called the Million Woman March. And initial rough estimates say that nearly 30,000 people gathered in more than 670 sister demonstrations around the world. That's a lot of people wanting to speak truth to power. A phrase that is often identified as being of Quaker origin, but which appears to have actually been coined by civil rights leader Bernard Rustin. We've been exploring this month what it means to be a people of prophecy, and perhaps more specifically, what it would mean to say that our Unitarian Universalist faith calls on us, as congregations, as individuals, calls on us to be a people of prophecy. The two busloads from our congregation who joined the gathered throng in D.C. and the thousands of other UUs around the country were living examples of at least part of what that means. One way of understanding prophecy, of course, is to think about soothsayers and oracles, fortune tellers and clairvoyants. But that's not how I'm using the word this morning. Instead, I'm talking about prophecy as that thing those well-known prophets of the Jewish tradition were all about. I'm talking about prophecy as speaking truth to power. The Talmud teaches that during the biblical period, there were hundreds of thousands of prophets, at least twice as many as the 600,000 who were said to have left Egypt. For a variety of reasons, however, Jewish scripture only identifies 55 of them. The majority, but not all of those remembered, were men. There are stories of 7 female prophets. And while that certainly isn't a lot, it's worth noting that the Talmud reports that the prophetic ability of at least one of them, Sarah, was superior to that of her husband, Abraham. God told Abraham to listen to his wife and to do whatever she told him to do, and said that he did not ennoble her, but that she ennobled him. Sarah would have brought Abraham to the march. Gender identity aside, the prophets all spoke out for justice and against the injustices they saw in the society around them. Amos, for instance, cried out because he saw that the wealthy and the powerful oppressed the poor and dispossessed, while at the same time pretending to be religiously observant. He said that the way those who had power treated those who did not was the measuring stick by which God would judge the whole nation. I despise your religious festivals. I take no delight in your assemblies, but let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream. Hosea preached that the primary focus of God's judgment was on the religious and secular leadership who willfully ignored God and deliberately abused those under their power. And while he predicted that both the northern kingdom of Israel and the southern kingdom of Judah were to pay the price for this, the people themselves, if they responded, would feel God's mercy. I desired mercy and not sacrifice, and the knowledge of God more than burnt offerings. Micah rebuked Israel because of dishonesty in the marketplace and corruption in government, and warned that when a nation's leadership fails to set the right example for their society, the society will crumble. He has shown you, O human, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. Over and over again, the men and women the Jewish tradition remembers as prophets bravely lifted up their voices to warn, to rebuke, to challenge. They said, in essence, the way things are is not the way things are supposed to be. And if things don't change, there's gonna be hell to pay. Cyprus did some research for this morning and came across the book, What Manner of Man is the Prophet?, written by the Polish-born American rabbi Abraham Heschel. Heschel was one of the leading Jewish theologians and philosophers of the 20th century, as well as a professor of Jewish mysticism in the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. In his book, Heschel identifies a number of characteristics of the Hebrew prophets. Here are a few. In and through the prophet's words, the invisible God becomes audible. The Hebrew word for prophet, Navi, comes from the term Niv Setayim, which means fruit of the lips. In his initiatory vision, the prophet Isaiah sees a seraphim take a live coal from the altar in the temple and place it burning on his lips. The prophet speaks for God. You could say that through the prophet, the people heard God's words in a human voice. It doesn't really matter what word you use to describe this thing the Hebrew scriptures call God. Call it the good or truth. Call it justice or love or spirit of life. The point here is that the prophet speaks for and from something larger than themselves. It isn't just an individual noting her or his preferences or personal biases. When the prophet speaks, something larger is speaking. When Ai-Jin Poo, director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance, or Sister Simone Campbell, executive director of Network Lobby, or Sabrina Fulton, Trayvon Martin's mother, or Ilyasha Shabazz, Malcolm X's daughter, or Gloria Steinem, or Angela Davis, when these women spoke yesterday, it was not simply their voices that were heard. Each of them, and all of the other speakers on that dais in DC and at those rallies and marches around the country and the world, spoke for and from something larger than themselves. They spoke on behalf of the 3 million women and children and men who had gathered, of course, and the hundreds and thousands more who were there in spirit. Yet they spoke on behalf of something even more than that. Call it love, call it justice, call it God, whatever you call it, it was speaking in and through those human lips. And like the prophets of old, these modern day prophets challenged the whole country and not just those individuals or groups that might seem most at fault. That's another one of Heschel's observations about the prophets of the Jewish tradition. They never said that society's problems were simply the fault of those other guys. You never heard a prophet in the Hebrew scriptures warn of God's judgment only on the one percenters, or the fat cats on Wall Street, or the crooked media. Oh, they had no problem calling out the powerful and the wealthy elite for their behavior or misbehavior. Yet they were equally clear that when things got really bad, as they inevitably would, it was going to be on everyone's head. Heschel says that the message of the prophets was that while few are guilty, all are responsible. Hear that again. While few are guilty, all are responsible. Drawing again on yesterday's rallies, no one was intended to take away the idea that those people over there, the ones who voted for Trump, let's say, or the ones who were and are now actively working with him, no one was saying that those people need to change their ways while the rest of us just go on living the way we always have. On the contrary, the hard truth of the prophetic imperative is that each of us is going to have to make some fundamental changes. Some fundamental and unvaryingly unwelcome changes in the way we live our lives. We, together, all of us, have to change, have to do things differently, have to be different. Heschel says that the purpose of prophecy is to conquer callousness, to change the inner person as well as to revolutionize history. It's not just them, it's us too. Because, of course, ultimately there is no us and them. We is the only reality. There is one other aspect which Heschel says is common to all of the biblical prophets, besides the fact that it seems to have been an awful job. Their message may have begun with a message of doom, but it ends with a message of hope. The way things are is not the way things are supposed to be, and if things don't change, there's going to be hell to pay. That's how it begins. Invariably, though, the prophet then says, but things can change. Things don't have to continue being the way things are right now. Instead of descending into hell, we can together create heaven on earth. Those 3 million women, children, and men, cis and trans and other, did not gather in cities and towns from Abilene to Zebulon in order to declare, we give up, we lost, we have been overcome. No. They said, we're not gonna take it. We will not be silenced. We will not be cowed. We will change the way things are into the way things should be. To say that we Unitarian Universalists are called to be a people of prophecy is to say that it is our faith's mission to affirm and promote, to advocate for, to work for the principles we hold so dear. The inherent worth and dignity of every person. Justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth. The free and responsible search for truth and meaning. The right of conscience and the use of the democratic process. The goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. Respect for the interdependent web of all existence, of which we are a part. As a people of prophecy, we add our prophetic voices to all those prophetic voices, past, present, and into the future, who will not stop until justice rolls on like a river and righteousness like a never-failing stream.